That's veteran English shoegazers Ride performing Peace Sign, the opening track from their new album, Interplay. The song got its start as a jam at vocalist guitarist Mark Gardner's Oxford Sound Studio back in 2021. And here is Mark now in that same studio to tell us more about the making of Interplay.
This is Oxford Sound. This is my studio. Quick little look around. That's the room in there where we did the recording.
Nice.
So really it was my kind of life's work that I always wanted to create a great space to do. I had like a little studio in my attic in my first sort of little two up two down that I had in Oxford. Then that moved into what was my girlfriend's garden at the time. And then this is the third, the proper one. I mean, cool. I kept Oxford Sound Studio in the name because it's actually to do with the postcode where I used to live. And obviously the song took the name, and that's where ourselves, Radiohead, Supergrass, all those kind of bands came out of that area back in the 90s, I guess
back,
now.
Back in the 90s. Yeah, so it's kind of your brand.
Obviously it's one of our songs, but I mean, I love it here. I mean, you know, I mean, I do when COVID kicked in, because I got it together about 5 years ago, and then suddenly we were into a pandemic, and I was just kind of like, what have I done?
Right.
But it's been really, really busy since, and it was kind of one of those be careful what you wish for things.
Yep.
Because I don't stop now, and I'm here all the time, pretty much. I pretty much live here.
So do you look at Interplay as being a COVID record of sorts? Because let's face it, everybody's got them, because that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I don't see it as being a COVID record, but I mean, it was one of the adversities that we were all facing, and certainly the band faced it, because half of our partners at the time were shielding, so I couldn't actually go back to my home. I mean, I had to live in the studio because I was still had to see some people, and that was the same for our drummer Laws. So it was a really difficult period, and I think, you know, it's unprecedented. No one ever went through that, and I think certainly with me, something like a song that I Came to See the Wreck is a kind of a bit of an exorcism of the darkness that I felt during that period, and a way to sort of go, you know, I don't know who I've known, where I'm going. I don't know what's going on. It's kind of, it's one of those tracks. So in a way, it was almost like a therapy, that track for me, that came from something dark. And I mean, and add to that, we were going through awful kind of litigation with an ex-manager that we'd sacked as well. So, you know, we came through quite a lot of adversity to get this record together. And I think for me, I think that's half of why it turned out so good, because it almost like you kind of almost need a bit of that, because it really brought us closer together and made us realize that, you know, we first got together because we used to make music. You know, it turned into a bit of a machine. It turned into kind of, you know, it was our living back in the 90s. I mean, now we have to do other stuff around it. But I think you can kind of lose sight of it sometimes, because, you know, and obviously we've been together now with the Reformation longer than when we were around the first time.
Yep.
And I think it was kind of good for us. You know, I think in a weird sort of way, it brought us close together. We had this studio, which felt like home to us. We never really had our own studio in this way. And almost it sort of indicated why I did such a ridiculous thing as to put money into building a studio, really. You know what I mean? I thought, well, it's for moments like this when something great can come out of it. And I think something great did come out of it. So, here we are.
Here we are. Well, the album is called Interplay. You recorded a lot in your studio there, and supposedly I've read it's your most collaborative effort. So, with that in mind, is how much did having the studio access all the time have to do with that? Did you guys talk about it being more collaborative, or was it more organic than that?
It was more organic than that. We didn't talk about it in that way. We just sort of got on and did it. And I mean, and I think the big difference was that I started out being engineer and kind of mixer for the early mixes as the demos and the early songs were coming together. That was more my role, or as much my role as being the guy in the band. And I was sort of hopping between this room and the live room a lot. But, you know, it was nice because we'd never really known that. We'd always go into studios with engineers, and mix, and then you started to feel a bit like, oh, the clock's ticking. We were always aware of the time, and that we were limited by how long we could be in places. So like maybe one just a few weeks in certain studios. So I think it was nice because we didn't feel that the clock ticking in that way. I mean, I felt really tired after a while because I kind of was, engineer. I was still being the guy in the band, but it was, I mean, whereas the others were sort of maybe enjoying playing in that way, I was still really conscious that, oh, we're getting a really good backing track and take here, and are all the mics on? Is everything re recording, as well as sort of thinking this is brilliant? So I don't know. And then at a certain point, I put the call into management, and it was like a bit of an SOS. It's like, I'm exhausted. I can't
Is that
be
why you got Richie
wearing
Kennedy involved?
exactly that. And then Richie came in, and he for me, it was like a godsend. I got in with him immediately well, and that just liberated me to then be the guy back in the band, which I really wanted to get back to. And and also at that time, we needed that. We were ready for some serious new input. We'd worked with Richie before when we worked with Errol in Battery with Flood. He was Flood's assistant, and he just seemed like a really lively, young, enthusiastic guy that was on his way to becoming a great producer, I'm sure, in his own right. So I think we caught him at a great time, and his mantra was, if I'm doing this, we have to make the best ride record. And that, and I think it's good to have a mantra like that around. That's kind of what you want when you go into a new record. So that was it. He was amazing, Richie. And I mean, I love the guy, and I'd like to do more with Richie. He's brilliant. And I like, he was Irish, very Irish. He's got the luck of the Irish sort of vibe about him. And it's nice, just the lovely energy to have in the room. And he really came in and took the baton and charged around the track with it. It's brilliant. So just at the right time.
So if other members of the band were being more collaborative with you, did you learn anything more about them as far as what their capabilities were or what their musical ideas and thoughts were?
I think it's always a learning thing, but I think we just have that natural chemistry with each other, which we keep each other. We push each other's game all the time, and we keep each other sort of, I just think it always happens like that. And that's obviously why we wanted, why I just thought it'd be great that with the reunion in the first place, I knew there was, the chemistry was always good with us. But I did learn that they're not very good at hoovering and cooking, and they left it all to me, as well as all the other things. So I was like, for God's sake, guys, I'm exhausted. So like, get the Hoover out. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Someone's got to clean this place as well. And like, I can't, and it got, I mean, but then, of course, because unless you do engineering and that stuff, how do you know? You don't know about it. You know what I mean? And it's like, and why would you want to? It's like, I did stupidly. And I had to sort of take that on. But I mean, it's no, it's look, it was all good. And I mean, I just think the interplay, I felt a lot more involved in this record, because to me, this whole console, because I went through COVID here, I had hours and hours here just sort of demystifying it all. And it becomes an instrument for me anyway, really, just to, it's fine. It's like, I'm not boggled by this. It's an instrument to me, like the consoles. And so it's it was I don't know. I just felt a lot more involved with this album.
Cool. And I think I read that you felt on the track Last Frontier that you kind of had to push yourself a little more vocally as well. So was that something that?
Well, actually, that was Andy. So
Oh, I'm
I
sorry.
think,
There
yeah,
you
no,
go.
no, no problem. We're easy to mix up. It happens all the time. So no worries.
Ways of leaving, ways to say goodbye, ways of seeing eye to eye, ways of leaving, ways to say goodbye, ways of seeing eye to eye, ways of leaving, ways to say goodbye, ways of seeing eye to eye, seeing eye to eye, without losing your way.
So Andy, the Last Frontier got rewritten a few times, and Andy, it's one that Andy jumped on, and it kept coming in, and I kept thinking, that's brilliant what you've done, leave it. And then he'd go away, and then he came back, and then the final version, at first when it wasn't mixed, I didn't quite get it. And then when it was properly mixed, I was like, oh yeah. And it suddenly then it was a sort of single contender. And no, I mean, I think for me, my vocal ones were, I mean, obviously Peace Sign, we're singing together.
Yep.
Actually, a lot of songs we sung together on this one. Like, I mean, Monaco is obviously more mine. I Came to See the Wreck is my lead vocal, I guess. Last Night is both of us again. Sunrise Chaser is both of us, but me doing the lead.
Right.
And then Portland Rocks as well. I mean, yeah, Swear is me as well. Yesterday, Just a Song is very much Andy. So, I mean, yeah, it's good. But I think when Andy and I sort of sing together, that's sort of a bit of a signature Ride sound. Right. I think whatever we do with the music around it, that always kind of brings it back to Ride in a way. So I think we can really push things out there, and it almost always then brings it back in a way when we do the singing thing.
And of course, one you didn't mention was Light in a Quiet Room, which I kind of like. It's got a psychedelic thing going on. It's really all sorts of stuff going on.
It's a bit spiritualized or something like that. I mean, I guess that's a bit more, if you were kind of trying to pick out a more shoegazy track on the album, I guess that one would kind of tick that box in a way.
Fading light in a quiet room, and the darkness is coming soon. I can feel a sense of relief in a space far beyond belief. Listen hard to the sounds of you, far away but still coming through. Don't worry, it's all in hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite psychedelic, and it's an interesting one, that one. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a little more of what people might expect it to be, whereas a lot of these other tracks on here, I think I'd do something completely different. And it's really nice. I've got the album in front of me, so I can actually refer to it, because I some of these interviews, I was thinking, like, which track is that?
Notes are key. So,
it's good.
Can you show me what the artwork?
I've got the CD. I've got the CD version. It's shiny, a bit shiny there, but
Who decided on the artwork?
You know, we work with management, and I mean, given that we were all art school boys, and I also do artwork. I mean, I kind of have a bit of a thing going. I'm a Clarendon Fine Art Gallery. Through COVID, I started doing some canvases. Anyway. Yep. I didn't do the artwork on this, and none of us did. And actually, we found someone that was doing some really interesting glitchy digital imagery, and we really liked it. And we kind of found a bit of a theme with it throughout. And there was a bit of argument over which image we should go with in the end. And this one, I think, in the end, kind of came through.
Gotcha.
It kind of felt right again as well with the way digital in the record was hitting the analog thing, if you know what I mean. I don't know why, it just seemed to sit quite well with the music, that it was a bit of a mishmash of sounds and songs and colors. I mean, that sounds a bit pretentious, but you know what I mean? It felt that it kind of just fitted it. I don't know why, but it did. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned shoegaze, and I think I read somewhere where apparently shoegaze is now getting cool and hip on TikTok. And so
we read that a couple of weeks ago as well. Our management forwarded it and was saying, well, you know, and thanks, Sodive has really sort of benefited from that directly. Right. And I mean, I don't know what's going on with that. I never did, and I probably never will. And it's like, whatever. I just don't get it. I mean, obviously a derogative term when it first came up, because we were not Nirvana in England, and someone went, well, if you're not Nirvana and grunge and sort of Kurt Cobain, then these lot are like shoegazers. You know, they're making a noise, but they're like not really. And it's like, okay, I will take that criticism, but. And now it seems to be a whole genre and God knows what. I mean, it's a huge thing. So yeah, it's a bit, you know, strange how that happens.
And now everybody's suddenly rediscovering My Bloody Valentine, and you know, nobody heard about it the first time around, and all those bands. So.
Yeah, apparently so. But then some of the is it Dweezer or something? I don't know who it was on the guy that it's. I didn't even know about some of the people they were talking about on one of the articles that I read. So I'm like, I don't even know who those people are. I suppose, yeah, we're supposed to be part of the authentic originators of something. Yeah. I mean, you know, which I get, right. I guess that's fine. And I mean, I guess for me, I think certain songs, like our old songs, like Dreams Burn Down or things like that, do seem to fit what I would say is that sort of shoegaze sort of idea. But, you know, look, who cares really about, you know, like sound? I mean, as a sound thing, I like the idea of widescreen. I like the idea of kind of cinematic. Those kind of things appeal to me.
Right.
But in the end, I think, you know, you've got to be able to play songs stripped back to an acoustic and voice, and they've got to stand up. And I think just as a sound without the songs, then it's a bit of an excuse to not be, you know, to not be very great at writing good songs. Sometimes it might be used a bit like that, but if you've got good songs and then it you know, you give it the shoegaze treatment, well, great, you might do okay.
So did you have any widescreen guitar players that influenced you, that you kind of look back at and go, oh yeah, I like what they're doing?
Well, I mean, I would think someone I was lucky to work with, someone like Robin Guthrie, I thought was, you know, Cocteau Twins was right. Just a beautiful sound for me. Still is. I will never tire of that band, and it's totally unique. And I think for me, he was the kind of godfather. I mean, yeah, Kevin Valentine a little bit as well, but I would say Robin Guthrie was a little bit more of the kind of originator of that right. for me. And, you know, and I love the guy, and you know, I love Cocteau Twins, and
you know, they're more contemporaries of yours. I'm talking about, you know, in your formative years.
Formative years, no idea. No, I mean, I mean, if we're talking about widescreen cinema, I mean, like Ennio Morricone is a god for me. So
there you go. Yeah.
So that, you know, I mean, I was lucky enough to see Ennio and his orchestra in Blenheim Palace, actually on the fated night of Brexit. And it was from heaven to hell, all in a night. I mean, you know, that was like, there was nothing like that. I was in heaven watching Ennio Morricone and his orchestra. And of course, we were all like, oh, God, the stupid Brexit thing, we've got, you know, that's not going to happen, is it? And we all kind of went home, and I've just thought, I'll just give it a little watch just to, you know, see that's just so ridiculous. That can't ever happen. And then it's like, what?
Yep.
And then I was just like, I can't actually believe this is happening. It was just hellish. And I mean, I felt really depressed after that for a good 2 weeks. And that was where the song Lanoi Point then came from, which is on Weather Diaries. So it was just, I was just so angry that, just seemed like the most backward move and stupid thing that Britain could ever do, basically. So I hate, you know, and here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah. And it's such a mess, you know. I mean, it's one of the many things that I don't want to get too political here, but I as you can tell, I think Conservatives have been dreadful for UK, and I'll be glad to see the back of them. It was time for a change a long time ago, pre-Brexit, and it certainly is time now.
Yes. Well, you're not alone. It seems to be a phenomenon in the States, obviously, even down in here. In you know, people want to change. They don't know what they want to change to. And then when they get the change, it's like, well, what happened? That's not what
I want. Yeah, well, this stupid thing about we want our country back. It's like, what are you talking about? Especially in America and UK, it's like immigration is what made these places great. It's like, you know, that's multiculturalism is what it's about. It's I mean, and especially Britain, do people really want to go back to sort of post-war depressing Britain, which was just dark? And I mean, I just think of a song like Specials, Ghost Town. That sums it up.
There you go.
You know, the perfect soundtrack for that depressing, awful kind of post-war Britain. It was not a pleasant place then, I don't think, at all.
Yeah.
Like, right, great, we want that back. But then, you know, look, the European Union, EU, has always been like a political thing with all governments for years with us. Yep. It's just like in, out, it's like the hokey pokey all the time. It's ridiculous. You know, look, I think we've done, I'm a European, I've lived in France. I love Europe, and I love the, you know, I love the closeness of Europe, and I think the world needs Europe to be strong together.
Now we got time for one more question, I think, and I was hoping to touch on the song, which I'm not sure how to pronounce. It's track 11, Suara, or
Suara, yeah. So
it's a town in Morocco, or a city in Morocco.
That's right.
And it caused me to Google and find out and go back, and you know, which is great. But what?
Yeah.
what's behind that one? Because it's like 7 minutes long. It feels like kind of a centerpiece of the record.
Interesting, because a few of the reviews I've read, not that I'm going to read all our album reviews, but a few that I have read, they seem to be really picking out this track and it's coming forward. And I must say, I was really proud of how it turned out. It started with a bass line from Steve.
Yeah.
Doing that doo doo doom doo doo doom 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 doom. And we had a lovely kind of just instrumental with it. And I think he was almost anti me putting any sort of vocals on it. Right. I still think now he finds it hard to hear with vocals because he was so sort of into it how it was. But I'd been watching in lockdown and stuff, I've been watching a lot of Adam Curtis documentaries, and I think he's a genius, you know, really interesting. And that's where the Monkees and the Machines came into it. And I kind of like, I love Massive Attack and the way they do, you know, some of those long tracks. And I wanted to sort of try a little bit more, not rappy, but just a bit more spoken word stuff. And it just, I mean, it just, it's, yeah, I love it. That for me is really widescreen and sort of cinematic in a way, that track. And I can't wait to play that live. But yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites for the album as well. And it's like I say, it's interesting that to see the reviews, and a lot of people are really picking that one out as well.
Right. So when you read reviews like that and you take note of what's being picked out and talked about, does that cause you to think about, well, maybe we'll do more or less of this next time, or
no? I wouldn't say next time. It just means that when we start arguing about set lists and what we're going to play, I'm going to be like, guys, that one seems to be being picked out a lot, so we should definitely be playing that one live. And right. I kind of always, when we put it down, when I just kept hearing it back, I just kept picturing it at festivals. You know, it's a very I think it'd be beautiful, and I'm really, I like I say, it's just got that thing that takes you somewhere, that, you know, which I love. The music is sort of transcendental music. When music does that, I love it. I mean, I came to see the records, another one on the album that I love as well. That really does that for me. There's a few on the album that really do it. And that's kind of why I'm really happy with it.
And you're heading on tour soon, right? So in May.
Yeah, we're off in May to the States again to start playing this album, and then it's July Far East, August to Australia and you good fellows in New Zealand.
Hey!
And Auckland, and then we come back and then we do the UK tour in September. So actually, by the time we get to Australia and New Zealand, we should be playing these new songs really well. We'll know them well by then, so I think you'll be all right.
That's a plus.
it is. If all goes to plan, now we're getting into rehearsal. So I was actually rehearsing a couple of songs acoustically today, right? Because we've got to go and we're doing some acoustic little shows.
Busy day for you then. You did the radio, the BBC, this and
it is, but you know, I'm busy doing music, so it doesn't really feel like work.
Gotcha.
It's all right.
Excellent.
I'm not complaining about that.
We got to wrap this up because you're a busy guy, and
I've got triple R next at 1:30, so we're okay. Yeah, we're okay. We're right. If there's anything else, you know, I've kept an eye on the time, but we're good.
I think we're good. I'm just looking forward to seeing you guys and hearing these songs live, because I have a feeling you're really gonna explode off the stage, so that'll be fun.
I hope so, and like I say, I hope, you know, I hope this record, you know, it's not so you know, just it, you know, it's hard to make a living from music these days, and it'd be nice if this record could just bump it up a bit, so that also so we could bring out lighting people and stuff and just make more of a show of it, you know. Which, you know, I think anything we do which becomes a little more successful, that it just goes back into the music anyway. So you know, it's quite ambitious, the record, and we are quite, you know, I still feel very ambitious with it. I always still feel that we've got something to prove, you know, so that keeps you hungry, and hopefully it's part, you know, why this record's good and why I feel good about the last records we've made with the reunion, because I think we are still hungry, and I think music's really transparent. So if there isn't that in the camp, and if the chemistry isn't good, then I just think the record sounds like that. So I think this just sounds like a band that's still really ticking nicely together and nice. Vibing. And like, as I said, we came through bloody a mad pandemic that no one saw that one coming. So you know,
no, they didn't.
So there we go. Yeah, it's just like, what a bizarre time that was. I mean, I still look back and just think, what was going on there? So like the day of the Triffids, driving over to the studio. I kind of, and also, I mean, the next village is George Orwell's buried. Two miles from here, you know, and I'm kind of like, whoa, that guy. I mean, he is still resonant. I mean, what a prophet in a way. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty wild. Resonates. It is wild. And then again, George Orwell, we saw the statue today at the BBC, and the lovely phrase about liberty is really being able to disagree with people, and tell them, you know, that. And it, if it's anything, it's that.
Yeah.
You know, which is just so poignant. I mean, especially given what's going on in Russia and stuff at the moment.
Yep.
It's just so, yeah, it's so good. But anyway, yeah, there we go.
Oh, there we go.
We're in with Orwell.
Yeah, why not? All right, very good. Have a great Easter. Hopefully you get a little rest and off you go again.
I will. Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks. Right, nice speaking to you.
You too. Cheers, bye. Mate.